Because it's going to rain. But if you're in the Plymouth area, there's going to be a rally for safety at the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station tomorrow morning from 10 a.m. to noon. This is sponsored by Pilgrim Make Us Safe Today and co-sponsored by the Sierra Club. The Pilgrim plant is up for relicensing in June 2012. There are several significant problems at the plant, not the least of which being that it's a nuclear power plant. The group Pilgrim Must is demanding that certain actions take place to ensure safety before state and federal officials grant a license extension. Well, even if you think there shouldn't be any license extension, you can go there and protest with Pilgrim Must tomorrow morning from 10 a.m. to noon at the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station. For more information, they only give a Facebook page. Look them up, Pilgrim Must.
And author Dan Rasmussen will speak about his New York Times best-selling book, American Uprising, The Untold Story of America's Largest Slave Revolt. This will be next Friday, May 13th, so not this, a week from today, at 7 p.m. at Encuentro 5, 33 Harrison Avenue in Chinatown. Rasmussen will reflect on the uprising, its suppression, and its disappearance from history. He will be joined by social change activists from the Encuentro 5 community. The audience will be encouraged to join in on the conversation, and there will be some snacks after the event. The event is free, and all members of the progressive community are invited. Copies of American Uprising will be on sale at the event. Visit www.encuentro5.org. That's with the number 5, not spelled out. Mm-hmm. Encuentro5.org for more information.
Okay, and Sunday at 11 a.m. at the Community Church of Boston, the Sunday Speakers Forum will celebrate Mother's Day with a speaker from the group Physicians for Social Responsibility, speaking about why nuclear power is not good for women, children, or other living things. Physicians for Social Responsibility is a nonprofit organization that speaks about the medical and public health reasons to prevent nuclear proliferation and to stop and reverse global warming and degradation of the environment. The Community Church is located at 565 Boylston Street in Copley Square. Visit communitychurchofboston.org for more information. Oh, I believe we are just about out of time now. Let's see if I press this button, if there will be something, yes, that will make a transition from this program to Music for Human Beings out. You are listening to WMBR in Cambridge. Stay tuned.
On May 7th and 8th, contemporary pioneers in art, science, and technology come together at MIT to create Fast Light. Over 20 art and architectural installations illuminating the campus along the Charles River at MIT. Fast Light kicks off on Saturday, May 7th at 7 p.m. with the inflation of two massive, brightly lit stars that will rise into the night sky over MIT's dome in Killian Court. The MIT campus adjacent to the Charles River will light up with displays of LED lights and interactive sculptures. All the works on display will be by faculty and students in a wide range of disciplines. Visitors are welcome to take a self-guided tour during the day on both May 7th and 8th. Fast Light is the grand finale of the Fast Festival, MIT's three-month-long celebration of its 150th anniversary, and is free and open to the public. Fast Light, Saturday, May 7th and Sunday the 8th at MIT along the Charles River.
It was more usual. It was usually iced tea or. What? How do you say the aid of lemons?
I forget.
Well, Erno, I greatly prefer on a hot day drinking hot gravy to drinking cold gravy.
For what it's worth, I think I must agree. Cold gravy does not sound at all tempting or pleasing in any context.
Absolutely. Now, the most common drink was mint tea. A nice mint tea on a very hot day.
That is an interesting combination. I think it perhaps it would do well.
No, but I bring up the issue of the meat tea because last week, after our program, I listened to Terra Voice briefly, and they spoke about vegetarianism, which is something that, as a transdermal mediator, I have seen many times among patients and also as a treatment to certain ailments. But as a practice on its own, I take some issue with it.
This issue is a very large discrepancy, or is it something minor?
You know, Zorro, very few cultures traditionally embody this idea of vegetarianism.
Except, of course, I think of the vegetarians.
But completely from...
I mean, is that not their culture?
You know, I'm not sure that this is an ancient culture that I'm aware of. I know that there are Buddhists who will not eat meat.
I agree with Zorro here, Doctor. I can't imagine any ancient culture, at least none to my knowledge, that actually make meat tea. In fact, I'm not even sure how you would make it. And as a potion master, that intrigues me.
Let's put the meat tea aside for a moment. But the idea of simply eschewing all meat in favor of leaves and shoots and berries.
I think that if you are the sort of person who will say, I shall shun the meat, you are perhaps isolationist. And in this regard, you will not know many. And this, I think, would explain if there are cultures who are vegetarian, they will not meet very many people, and that is why you will not know of them.
A broader isolationism?
Yes, yes.
I'm not sure.
I mean, it may be broader, but it could be just as narrow, but twice as strong.
Hmm. In my own culture, there are traditional dishes which are prepared without meat, but again, out of necessity. And when meat becomes available, it is strange for a person to say, no, I reject this.
So it is a function of the scarcity or something like this?
Hmm. It is a valued
thing. It's a rarity. I think this makes sense if you consider the effort, what you must go to trap or hunt the meat, as opposed to the effort it is to... perhaps it is effort to be collecting the vegetable as well, because you must sow it first.
Perhaps in our culture, the... How shall we say, the appreciation of meat has been lost due to its plentiful overabundance.
In fact, I have heard it suggested that this overabundance and the practice which we use to go and get the meat, the way that we harness animals is leading to conditions which are not not favorable for them. And
I can't imagine that being eaten is favorable for anybody.
I think so, but the particular living conditions as well. And I have heard the suggestion that this contributes to the lowering of the quality of the meat, and this sort of is an explanation of why to be a vegetarian. Because if we refrain and make it so that the meat is coming from a wild source, it will taste better. I think it's part of the reason not to eat it.
But then I'm sure that there are those who will confront your argument and respond by saying, well, these animals, we are just killing them and eating them anyway. Why does it matter how we treat them while they are alive?
I think it might affect the taste of the dish.
Happy meat is then more meaty?
I think it is a possibility. I'm not incredibly sure, but I merely relay the suggestion which has been given to me.
And I'm merely throwing back a hypothetical argument that I really never heard anyone make, but I believe can be used to...
Then I will certainly pass it along.
Yes, you should indeed tell whoever you are arguing with that this is an argument they could use.
I would say that more they were not an argument with me, but... how do you say something of a pedestal, like they are at the podium, they are lecturing.
So again, the argument for vegetarianism here is the ethical treatment of the animals?
Yes, I think that the argument is that if the animals are treated in their more natural state, that they will taste better.
Mm.
And so if we decline to have meat except on very special occasions, then we will be able to consume entirely these, I think they are called free-range animals that may live as they please. And this happiness is contribute to the well-being of the animal. And the taste of the meat, therefore.
But this is not an argument for wholesale vegetarianism, then.
Well, I think it is a combination, actually, of the altruism. And that is to say that it is a reason for me to be a vegetarian so that the meat that others may consume may be better.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that perhaps if the living conditions of the animals are so horrible that the animals just end up not tasting as good as the vegetables, so in fact it's logical to be a vegetarian. And as being a vegetarian does not completely rule out all tasty, wonderful, delicious foods from your diet. I mean, you could still eat many good things. You could still have cheeses, olives, any non-meat material, chicken, for instance?
I think that chicken is a meat under our most classification systems.
I think that is up for debate, actually.
There are fish, I believe. There are people... the word is pescetarian.
Pescetarian.
Pescetarian. They do not eat what normal meat, but they will eat the fish.
But why would you classify a chicken not as a vegetable?
I think it is an animal, and that is why you give the name of the food a meat.
But what makes something an animal? I see a large difference between a pig and a chicken, or a cow and a chicken, a turkey and a chicken.
I'm not a technical expert on these things, but a chicken, it makes many noises, it vocalizes itself. It is free to move about by its own power, and it seems to have something of a will. It may have some rudimentary form of consciousness or something that is letting it to move and to think I am hungry. Or perhaps I am frightened. I think that this is part of what you call an animal.
No, I agree with Erno here, Zoro. I think that it is a fuzzy line between the two types of creatures.
Because there are plants that exhibit all of these traits. Mm. Lily pads move in the water. Leaves blow in the wind. There are even, I am told, certain forms of carnivorous plants that eat animals. So why do we classify them as plants?
I think nutritionally it may be more interesting to think of the various proteins that exist within animals. So classify them by the actual effect.
Ah.
But the idea again of being vegetarian based on the ethical treatment of animals is one that I understand not to be completely vegetarian, simply to restrict oneself to ethically raised animals. Yet, ironically, it seems to be unjust for the animal. Is it not the animals that are mistreated that we would want to execute, put out of their misery? The ones that are treated ethically, that are happy,
they should keep on living. But then again, it's a paradox, because the only reason we have mistreated animals is because we eat meat to begin with.
Perhaps, does it make a difference if the animal is a vegetarian?
Then maybe we should learn from its example.
So the vegetarian animals should not be eaten?
Well, we could still eat them and learn from their example.
And then we will teach a lesson to those animals which eat meat to consume them.
Ah, yes, yes.
Let's return to the idea of meat tea.
How is this meat tea made, Doctor?
Well, you know, when I said meat tea earlier, I had as an image in my mind liquefied lamb fat. But when we said meat tea, I suddenly had this image of taking a bowl full of ducks and simply drawing the water from the bowl, an infusion of duck infusion being tea. Just tea. Similarly, one could drink human tea.
But do you boil the ducks, or the like? I'm not sure how to extract the duck essence.
I think boiling is unnecessary. I think simply long steeping. It could be a sun tea, sun meat tea.
I see.
Or iced tea.
Is this why we put all these lakes and parks and such?
I'm not sure. I've never seen anyone come to collect the tea.
Perhaps
likewise,
it's still steeping.
It's possible. Also, one may imagine a human tea by collecting water from a pool.
A human tea.
Indeed. Of course, tends to be quite a bit of chlorine in the human tea I have recently sampled.
And yet, if we had human tea, the community could come together and drink the souls of one another and become one.
Mm.
And if we had the duck tea, we could become one with the ducks. Perhaps this is not so strange a goal.
Well,
I don't know. I think perhaps now I will be the advocate of the devil and to say, is it some form of cannibalism?
I'm not even sure that drinking mead tea violates being vegetarian any more than
the animals are not killed.
Eating cheese or eggs or other animal products. It probably violates like a vegan standard to do so.
I see. It is not harmful to the humans.
I remember being told as a child not to drink the water that is found in such places.
Or to drink breast milk. It's likewise, it's not cannibalism. Many people at some stage in their lives do consume breast milk and they are not seen as cannibals. Although, I think there is a distinction there. I mean, to extend this further, the idea that one is not a cannibal because one is not harming the animal. I understand that it is not so uncommon for women to have fat removed from their bodies. If this were made into a stew, would this also be cannibalism or...
But there is another question.
Harmed,
I mean, to say harm, what do you mean? Perhaps it is very distressful to hatch from a chicken so many eggs.
Well, it is regarded as vegetarian in spite of this.
It may leave some scar which is not visible but is there, is affecting the psychology of the chicken.
I think what the doctor is saying, Zoro, is that if the person decided to have the fat removed voluntarily for, be it cosmetic reasons, then it would not be cannibalism to
prepare some kind of a meat cake or something?
Yes, or to just...
I do not think that I will understand this perspective.
Or to fry an egg in, or I'm not sure, but it's simply a mental experiment. Where is the line? Why is this cannibalism and the other is acceptable? And likewise, one who... Well, I'm not sure. I think this may be a matter for debate. The number, if you would like to proffer an opinion, is 617-253-8810.
If you would like to steep in this tea of knowledge, please call in.
Which we will drink later.
So I think that perhaps it is something that we sip over the whole hour.
The image of duck tea. Duck tea. Either of the two definitions of duck, actually, one would be really nice, the other is...
I'm sorry, doctor, what are the two definitions of duck?
The two definitions of tea.
Oh.
For meat.
For a second, I thought you meant that there were two different definitions of duck, and I could only think of one, and...
I think there are several, but one is a verb.
True, indeed.
It brings another question, I think, and that is to say, perhaps what is it to go to the other end of the spectrum and instead of to make a tea from some kind of a plant or something of this sort and think the opposite of the animal, make a tea which is mineral and to stew a rock or something of the sort. Until that it will feel the liquid and that you may bring the essence of the rock into you.
The essence of the rock.
Yes, I mean, it is in analogy with the tea of a meat or something of the sort.
So if we boil a rock...
You may make a salty or something.
And drink the water. Rock tea.
Something like this, I think, perhaps to consider. And there is no possibility in my mind that it would be considered unjust.
Yeah, I think that would be just. But if it is really an issue of justice, then why is it forbidden to eat criminals or people who have committed crimes who are sentenced to death?
No, I think that there is a word for this. It is an ass, that you make a nasty.
But why is it forbidden? Why is it unjust? We will, you know, we will murder a person who has committed murder or who constructs buildings that fall on people. Or who have committed a variety of other crimes. If killing them is permitted, why not eating them also?
A variety? I don't know this type.
And any number of crimes. I'm not sure. Erno, Zorro? Is it just or unjust?
I've not heard of this to happen before. It is quite rare. Maybe I'm not sure if it is desired. It is something which I think is not pursued. And this is it moral? I do not know if it has been tried.
Erno?
I'm not sure. There seems to be some sort of fundamental difference between the normal and commonplace duck tea and the eating of criminals. Perhaps it has something to do with them not being like ducks, being animals, being human.
But there are ways that is considered acceptable to take part of another person and to make it part of yourself. The transplants or making a wig out of another person's wig, all of these are considered acceptable. The idea of eating another person is unacceptable because of the harm that is done to an innocent person. But if the person is unharmed, or if the person is not innocent, what of consuming part of them? Consuming something they have emitted, consuming the breast milk of a woman, is considered acceptable, I think. But
for a certain age bracket, it is.
It is recommended. But for the elderly, no. Or to make cheese out of this milk and then to consume this is also reviled.
I have not even considered this practice before. It is so foreign.
But let us consider it.
Perhaps, Doctor, you are simply on a stomach which is not full.
As a potion master, I will drink many things, Doctor. But we are getting close to the line, I think. Speaking... Speaking of the line...
Yes.
I believe there's someone on it.
Let's bring a caller in, 617-253-8810, if you'd like to join. Caller, marhaban.
Marhaba.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. There is great historical precedent in eating other human beings. Simply in times of food shortage, it happens.
Yeah, it has happened. There are situations under which it is permitted, but it's similar, I think, to committing other crimes under duress.
And I'm not sure that permitted is the quite word we want. There are times under which the duress, it happens, but I think that afterwards there is some kind of stigma
associated with it. But for example, let's take a much milder thing. It is considered generally impermissible to destroy a door which does not belong to you. However, if you are being chased by a large fireball or a wolf and you need to be on the other side of a door, destroying the door is acceptable.
But if you destroy the door, then the fireball or the wolf can also cross over and may still consume you.
This is true.
There has to be a line somewhere. I don't quite know where, but there's a difference between being stuck in a cave with no food and the other extreme being in a line for a restaurant and not getting your table quick enough, and so you start eating the other people in the line. There,
I think that the line there is some number of years, perhaps, and that most people are seated before the restaurant make you wait so long.
So what you're saying, Zoro, is that if there's a hypothetical restaurant that makes you wait years before you get to table, then it's okay to eat the other people waiting.
I did not say that. I do not believe.
Suppose that you are trapped in the restaurant and you are starving, but you are capable of consuming an extremely portly person who is sitting next to you.
I think that I prefer the lean meat.
But the portly person might be able to nurture more people. If you eat the portly person, you might not need to eat as many people.
On the other hand, if you eat 5 or 6 babies, it may take a large number of infants to feed the same number of people.
At the same time, it is much easier to make 5 babies than it is to raise a man to be old and portly.
At the same time.
But think of all the resources that our society has to use to raise those 5 babies. The resources dedicated to education, the baby will not become part of the productive labor force for, how many years? 18 years or so, whereas the big fat guy is already a part of the productive labor force.
Perhaps the answer is that instead of eating the portly person, the people in line for this restaurant just keep having babies and keep themselves fed for indefinite period of time.
Well, certainly that falls into line with what Jonathan Swift proposed in the 18th century.
Can you elaborate on that, caller?
Well, yes. Have you read his essay, A Modest Proposal?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm vaguely aware of it. Yes.
Yes, essentially, he believed that plump Irish babies should be eaten.
I'm not sure why the proposal is considered modest.
Because he was not conceited.
I see. It is to say, look, I am just seeing the world as it is.
Yes, or perhaps he wanted to feign modesty.
Oh, interesting.
In Swift's case, I think it is intended as satire, but here the proposal is is simply for the hypothetical. In the case where you are starving and the only food available is cheese made out of breast milk, would you eat it? Of course.
Well, absolutely. Well, the breast might become very painful if it was just over. Supposing the woman had just given birth, she would, you know, she would, perhaps she was producing more milk than the baby could consume, or perhaps they had already eaten the baby, then it, you would be...
Absolutely. It would be completely justified, I believe.
I don't think that at this point I am very hungry. It is not necessary to be consuming these things for me.
No, but you are starving. You will die if you cannot find it in yourself to eat the cheese which has been made from this milk.
It is, in the colloquialism of our times, Doctor, a slippery slope. We start down this path, and yes, we eat breast milk cheese to keep from starving, but then what keeps us from making breast milk cheese factories and selling it to an organic grocery stores?
Or to be married to the breast milk or some of this absurd notion.
Yes, anything can happen on international waters, Doctor, and you don't really want to start this.
What have you named so? What have you named so far that there would be any problem if it did start?
And a very interesting question.
Well, we wouldn't want people marrying breast milk.
What?
Of course, I just tend to be a conservative, I guess.
Why, and to continue, in the case of the starving person, because I think that is a case which is illuminating, one may imagine making a sandwich which contains the fat from the love handles of several patients. In the moment where you are starving, who would deny the person who is willing to eat this?
Only a very self-righteous person.
I agree with the caller.
And that person would not have handles of love.
I'm not quite sure I understand. It is the situation that there is bread to make a sandwich, but we must put upon the bread the love handles.
Well, what
else would you make a sandwich out of? It can't just be bread.
I beg to differ. I think that bread on its own accord is a food.
But it's not a sandwich. And if you're starving, you need a sandwich.
Perhaps we are having a personal disagreement, but I will not press the issue.
Well, let us suppose
you want to do something disgusting, like eat plain bread.
Let's assume,
by all means, Zora,
that only the fat is available, and you liquefy it and drink it—a gravy.
This tea, I think, that you mentioned earlier,
human tea, to save humanity.
I recently reread Voltaire's Candide, and you know, in that fictional piece, perhaps we can assume that it's fiction. There is a monastery and a nunnery that are under siege from the infidels, the non-Christians, and as when the supply of food runs out, the monks cut off one of each nun's buttocks, one buttock from each nun, so that they do not starve to death. So we have religious precedent for cannibalism.
I'm not sure that the president, the author in this case, is he of the scholar, a religious scholar? I'm not sure.
Well, there are religious people in his fictional writing.
I see. Perhaps, okay, I'm agree.
I personally would not want to eat a nun's buttock.
I think perhaps it would depend upon the nun.
There are much better cuts, I agree.
Ah.
My image of the nun is being tough and old, but a novice.
You must remember that all that were old were once young, so there must be a young nun.
Historically, roughly speaking, sometimes young women who had no future ahead of them thought that being in a nunnery could be better than not being in a nunnery.
The average age probably is high, however.
I've never lived in a nunnery and don't know.
And there would be very few children in the nunnery.
I see.
Well, all of this is making me, ironically, somewhat hungry.
I think that I am hungry for another voice. Perhaps if there is anyone listening, they may call in.
Yes, please do. The number is 617-253-8810.
We would love to hear your opinion of the best way to eat and the most desperate eating that you will have.
I would like it to be known that I'm very tall.
I would like it to be known that I tend to be a good cook, and should I ever be stuck in this situation, it would be to everyone's benefit to not eat me. Doctor, if you are hungry, I believe I saw our engineer leave his dinner in the engineering room.
I actually have some.
He did seem to want to eat it.
Cheese here. No, I'm kidding.
Of course. I did not think that you were not.
He ate it all for lunch. There's none left over.
I wonder if the flavor would differ with the diet of the female that the milk was drawn from.
I'm certain of this.
This cheese tastes of onions. Let's bring that caller back. Caller, marhaban.
Marhaba. Perhaps the taste of the human flesh or of the milk is a function of the demographics, the ethnic demographics, or the personality of the provider. Perhaps, you know, the sweet dispositioned person, that person's flesh, or if a recent mother, her milk tastes especially sweet. And when we commit cannibalism or such, we should look for the sweet dispositioned people and those, you know, of good living habits.
If we are starving, should we even be concerned about the taste? That's
I think I am interested is that if this is true, we may find about the person by to sample his meat.
And if we eat the person, do we become the person?
There is the saying that you are what you eat. I'm not sure if it applies on this level quite.
Let's bring in a second call. I think I hear the strange bell. Caller two, marhaban.
Yeah, hi. I was wondering,
yes.
Are the people for the Terra Voice there at 8 o'clock, do they need a babysitter or are they all straight?
I really don't know.
They were eaten during a food shortage.
What I was asking was, the people at Terra Voice at 8 o'clock, do they need a babysitter?
Why would they need a babysitter?
The girls are OTA approved, so that's why sometimes I'm there to help them out, because I am, and I was wondering if they're there tonight, if they needed one, because it's a couple of minutes before showtime.
Well, they're not here, and, you know, why don't you call them?
I believe they're all of an age where they could take care of themselves in the house alone.
Okay, so they don't need
they're on the radio. They must be.
All right. I know that, but I'm just asking, like, if they're there.
Are they there?
Perhaps I'm not understanding the question.
There is no information that we can give you about this.
We're on the air. We don't know.
Okay, if you're on the air, never mind. That's all good.
Okay, thank you, caller. Let's bring someone else on the air. Caller, marhaban.
Was that guy talking about the alcoholics celebration tonight?
I'm not sure, actually, caller. I think there is a program after us, and he's asking about them, but we are in the studio.
Guy's voice was weird.
Please tell us about this celebration.
Well, it's happening in Cambridge.
And what are we celebrating?
Well, there are pigeons in Cambridge.
Oh, that's excellent.
So they are being consumed, or is it another liquid?
Is
I
it
don't
a
know
soup?
Too many people that eat pigeons.
A tea?
Do pigeons eat people?
I think if it was sufficiently flavored, or if they were sufficiently desperate. Again, I think pigeons are not carnivorous, but I think under certain circumstances they may be. Let's bring in yet another voice. Stay with us, caller. Caller 8, marhaban.
Oh, hi there. Hey, you're a little faint. I'm having trouble hearing you, but
I'm sorry.
Do you think that the way that I just noticed, because it's warm out and there's, you know, I'm a heterosexual male and there's just beautiful women walking around everywhere, if that would play into the whole cannibalism thing? Do you think it's on physical appearances that translate into when you eat people?
Well, I think that, you know, it is instructive to think about wanting to eat an animal which also is physically attractive. An animal that you would like to be around is the same one that you would like to consume, in my experience.
So I think this
That's
is why...
healthy.
This is why, through evolution, animals who survive really well tend not to look like steaks or hot dogs or baskets of popcorn by nature.
No, but at the same time, a healthy animal, one that would survive, also appears like a steak or a hot dog or a meatball.
But not in the natural environment. They're turned into that.
I think that if you see one of these animals and you have an appetite, you will see it.
Perhaps that's why they're all extinct. And yes.
If you think about, you know, people say they don't eat pigs, and there's the religious side to it, but it's also, they say they're a filthy animal, but I think pigs are kind of cute, you know? I just wonder where people draw our conclusions from
cute animals. Definitely, it makes a link, I think, between your saying of the attractive women and your hunger, and if it affects the taste, you like the pig, and you think it is very appealing.
Caller, let me ask you, does your preference for women lean toward larger or leaner women?
Generally larger.
And your taste also for meat, towards lean meat or fatty meat?
Lean meat or what was the other option?
Meat with fat.
That's a good question. I'm quite a big meat eater. I've been trying to cut back. I'd say fattier. I'll go fattier.
So I think this is a data point. This is one person where the preference is the same. Is the other caller still with us?
Do you guys work for Clear Channel?
For no caller, I'm asking.
I'm just trying to hear you. One more time.
Do you like fat meat or do you lean meat for the
fat
other
meat.
Caller?
Fat meat.
But the other caller.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Caller, are you still with us? Let's bring someone in else. It's a new caller. Caller 9, marhaban.
Hello there.
Welcome, caller.
Yes, now, all this carry on about eating the buttocks of a nun. Now, that'd be ridiculous. Now, I want to tell you the truth now. I've bitten the buttocks, a live buttock, but I didn't bite it too hard now. Just, you know, enough to leave an impression.
No, of course, absolutely. It's merely a hypothetical, caller.
I'm not certain that it is entirely hypothetical. There is some reference of the history that we are not sure if it is hypothetical.
Yeah, but caller, let us ask simply.
I recognize that other man, that I won't say his name, but his initials are BS, and I think that story might be BS.
Now, caller, let us ask simply. You yourself, do you prefer meat with a lot of fat or lean meat?
Well, if you got a little fat on the side there, it makes it juicier, see?
Mm.
But so you want to call what they call marble. There's ribbons of fat that go through the meat.
You'd like the meat to be suffused with flavored fat.
That's correct.
Now,
then you get it makes it more tender as it's cooking, see? The juices run through the meat.
No, absolutely. But now also for your preferences, for your sexual preference, is it towards men or women that have fat running through them, or that are lean, that are fatless?
Well, now I'll tell you the truth. I'm a big man myself, but I always kind of like the medium to lower size ones. But I haven't seen a girl tonight as I got older. You know, I gotta kind of take what I can get. But a girl with a nice figure is harder to come by. But I myself would prefer a petite woman.
A petite, someone who is a little, so not quite as tender as the meat that you prefer.
As the time marches forward, you know, you can't get like the young ones anymore. You gotta, you know, any port in a storm.
I see.
So this data, it works against the conclusion that the other caller mentions.
Yes, it seems that there is not very much correlation between the taste of your appetite in food and your appetite in the sexual sense.
Yes, I agree with you.
They may indeed be unrelated.
I just want to say that I think you have a wonderful program.
Well, thank you so much, caller, and I think it is only made more wonderful by your patronage. And
I got lots of more to say, but a young lady just came in, and I guess she's a customer I got to take care of.
And thank you for calling.
Thank you so much, caller.
Goodbye, now.
Awesome. We just have time for maybe one quick call, perhaps. Very quick. Caller 18, marhaba.
I was instructed to tell you that as Cambridge is a place, it is a place where I do not work in any sense of this show. Cambridge or Boston, the Cambridge, Boston, Massachusetts, United States.
You do not work?
Area. I actually pay money to your people. We use the same currency, but I'm not working there anymore.
I see.
I'm sorry, I'm not following.
I think I understand the literal words, but I'm not sure of the motivation.
Yeah, I think it is important to know sometimes when it is not necessary to understand.
Thank you.
Caller, thank you so much for being with us. And is the earlier caller still here? I think we lost him or her or them or it as well. Thanks to our many callers, especially the ones we were unable to get to. Thank you, Erno.
Thank you, Doctor.
And thank you, Zorro.
Thank you, Doctor. And of course, as always, thank you to all the listeners out there as well.
I am Dr. Janis Sakran here on Music for Human. Music for Human is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you here on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM every Friday at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Terra Voice. Ma'a salama. Thank you.
Four points for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Opinions presented on this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. This is Terribles. WMBR, Cambridge, 88.1 FM.